The Damned by Algernon Blackwood. Chapter 1. I'm over 40, Frances, and rather set in my ways, I said good-naturedly, ready to yield if she insisted that our going together on the visit involved her happiness. My work is rather heavy just now, too, as you know. The question is, could I work there with a lot of unassorted people in the house?
Mabel doesn't mention any other people, Bill, was my sister's rejoinder. I gather she's alone, as well as lonely.
By the way she looked sideways out of the window at nothing, it was obvious she was disappointed. But to my surprise, she did not urge the point, and as I gathered at Mrs. Franklin's invitation, lying upon her sloping lap, the neat childish handwriting conjured up a mental picture of the banker's widow, with her timid, insignificant personality, her pale gray eyes, and her expression as of a backwards child. I thought, too, of the roomy country mansion her late husband had altered to suit his particular needs, and of my visit to it a few years ago when its barren spaciousness suggested a wing of Kensington Museum fitted up temporarily as a place to eat and sleep in. Comparing it mentally with the pokey Chelsea flat where I and my sister kept impecunious house, I realized other points as well. Unworthy details flashed across me to entice. The fine library, the organ, the quiet workroom I should have, perfect service, the delicious cup of early tea, and hot baths at any moment of the day, without a geyser. It's a longish visit, a month, isn't it? I hedged, smiling at the details that seduced me, and ashamed of my man's selfishness, yet knowing that Frances expected it of me.
There are points about it, I admit. If you're set on my going with you, I could manage it all right.
I spoke at length in this way because my sister made no answer. I saw her tired eyes gazing into the dreariness of Oakley Street, and felt a pang strike through me. After a pause, in which again she said no word, I added, "So, when you write the letter, you might hint, perhaps, that I usually work all the morning, and am not a very lively visitor. This she'll understand, you see." And I half rose to return to my diminutive study, where I was slaving just then at an absorbing article on comparative aesthetic values in the blind and deaf. But Frances did not move. She kept her gray eyes upon Oakley Street, where the evening mist from the river drew mournful perspectives into view. It was late October. We heard the omnibuses thundering across the bridge. The monotony of that broad, characterless street seemed more than usually depressing. Even in June sunshine, it was dead. But with autumn, its melancholy soaked into every house between King's Road and the embankment. It washed through into the past instead of inviting it hopefully towards the future. For me, its easy width was an avenue through which nameless slums across the river sent creeping messages of depression, and I always regarded it as winter's main entrance into London. Fog, slush, gloom trooped down it every November, waving their forbidding banners till March came to rout them. Its one claim upon my love was that the south wind swept sometimes unobstructed up it, soft with suggestions of the sea. These lugubrious thoughts I naturally kept to myself, though I never ceased to regret the little flat whose cheapness had seduced us. Now, as I watched my sister's impassive face, I realized that perhaps she too felt as I felt, yet brave woman, without betraying it. "And look here, Fanny," I said, putting a hand upon her shoulder as I crossed the room. "It would be the very thing for you. You're worn out with catering and housekeeping. Mabel is your oldest friend, besides, and you've hardly seen her since he died."
"She's been abroad for a year, Bill, and only just came back," my sister interposed. "She came back rather unexpectedly, though I never thought she would go there to live."
She stopped abruptly. Clearly she was only speaking half her mind.
"Probably," she went on, "Mabel wants to pick up old links again."
"Naturally," I put in, "yourself chief among them." The veiled reference to the house I let pass. It involved discussing the dead man, for one thing.
"I feel I ought to go anyhow," she resumed. "And of course it would be jollier if you came too. You'd get in such a muddle here by yourself, and eat wrong things, and forget to air the rooms, and, oh, everything." She looked up, laughing. "Only," she added, "there's the British Museum."
"But there's a big library there," I answered, "and all the books of reference I could possibly want. It was of you I was thinking. You could take up your painting again. You always sell half of what you paint. It would be a splendid rest, too, and Sussex is a jolly..."